You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, Ben Standing here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. You know it, your daily conversation for all things Washington Wizards. Talking to you guys Thursday night, one day after the Wizards took a 2-0 lead on the Atlanta Hawks in their best of seven first round Eastern Conference playoff series. That is a mouthful. If you didn't already catch it, Todd Dibas and I recapped Game 2. You can find that on iTunes, and we are now on Stitcher. Hopefully that works for a lot of you, because I know people have been asking, and it took a minute to get that done, but we're done. We're on Stitcher, so check that out. As I always say, if you've got a quick second, well, please obviously download. If you got a quick second to either write a review or at least just give us a nice rating, that would be fantastic. Here is the deal for today. This podcast, the one you're listening to right now, veering off, we get into some Wizards, but I have on with me my guy, Bobby Bancroft. He is on with me. He and I typically are on here. We've talked about Georgetown, but he's at Wizards a lot. He was at Wizards for Game 2. So he and I, we did talk a little bit about the Wizards. Specifically, are the Wizards at this point looking like the best team in the East? Some people have that perspective. We did talk before the Bucks and Raptors in Game 3 and before Cleveland rallied back against the Pacers in Game 3. But in any event, just sort of talked about the East. We also talked about the Celtics, their 0-2 hole. How did this happen? Why did it happen? What do we make of it? And what Boston could or should have done to avoid this? And also we got in some Russell Westbrook talk. In addition, I will put up another podcast tonight with Mr. Scott Jackson from ESPN 980. He and I talked more directly about the Wizards, his thoughts on Game 2, some appreciation for March and Gortat, and for whatever the reason, I decided to bring up John Wall wearing a Dallas Cowboys jersey again. So, my take you'll most likely like, I guess. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, so you can find that on the podcast as well. All right, so let's get into this. Here we go. Bobby Bancroft and I talking Wizards, but also talking the NBA playoffs so far. If you want to follow Bobby on Twitter, he's at Bobby Bancroft. I'm at Ben Standing, and of course, Locked On Wizards. So here we go, some NBA talk, as well as some Wizard talks with Bobby Bancroft. All right, hello and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standing here. We're going to talk a little Wizards here, but we also want to talk some NBA, because there's a lot of things happening around the league. Some have to do with the Wizards, tangential to the Wizards, or just things that are interesting that I want to talk about. And to do that today, we have the guy that you know from all your friends who cover Georgetown, because they think he knows he's the bee's knees when it comes to the Hoyas. But he was also with me at the Wizards game Wednesday night, Mr. Bobby Bancroft. Mr. Bancroft, how are you?
Pretty good. It's fun not to be talking about Georgetown and talk about the NBA playoffs.
Right. These teams all have assistant coaches. So we only talk about teams that have assistant coaches on this podcast. That is a new rule I'm implementing, at least for now. All right.
Sounds like a very good rule.
So I do want to get to some Wizard stuff in a sec, but there's some other things, like I said, in the NBA I want to get to. If you haven't heard, though, of course, go check out the podcast I did with Todd Dibas on Wednesday after Game 2. We went through all things about the Wizards taking a 2-0 series lead, John Wall, Bradley Beal in the closer role, March and Gortat over Dwight Howard, and certainly the one rotation part for the Wizards that we would change if Scott Brooks would listen to us. Also, have a Wizards podcast, if you haven't already heard, Thursday night as well, Straight Wizards podcast. This is a little bonus coverage, as it were. So let's talk about this, Bobby. I don't want to jump ahead at all. I don't think the Wizards have closed the door on the Hawks, so who knows? But that said, if they were to advance, they're up 2-0. The thinking was they would play the Boston Celtics. At the moment, that doesn't seem likely. The Celtics, they lose the first two games at home. They're now down 0-2 to the suddenly revitalized Bulls, and it's fascinating, this series, on multiple levels. First of all, in the Bulls, you've got the resurrection of Rajon Rondo. You've got Dwayne Wade now back from injury. Jimmy Butler is the best player in the series, I think. And then there's and so the Bulls are playing at a level nobody really saw coming. But then you have the Boston side of it, and that to me is the more interesting part. The Celtics are the number one seed in the East. Kudos to them for getting there. They're a real try hard kind of a team. They've got a lot of tough guys. Isaiah Thomas is a beast. He's obviously going through some personal tragedy, which is obviously a terrible situation. And to some degree, you have to think that's a factor here. But, you know, trying to look beyond that aspect of it and just focus on the basketball part of it. But what's fascinating is how the Celtics, I know for me, I was one of those people at the trading deadline going, wait a minute, you're telling me the Celtics aren't going to do anything? Okay, I mean, maybe they couldn't get Jimmy Butler or Paul George, as the rumors were having. They literally didn't do anything. The Wizards go ahead and give up a first to get Bojan Bogdanovic. The Toronto Raptors in the East made two big moves to get Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker, trading a lot of picks. The Cavaliers earlier in the season gave up a first-round pick to get Kyle Korver. Other teams made moves. The Celtics did zero. I couldn't believe it. Most of all, they got a bazillion picks. I think I looked at, they have like 12 picks over the next 4 years. They've already had a bunch of picks. They did nothing. To me, that's the more interesting part of them being down 0-2 on some level. But before I rant more on this, and I have plenty to say, what are you when you see the Celtics down 0-2 to the Bulls?
I think this is the Bulls that, you know, people thought maybe would be possible. But you factor in Dwayne Wade's age and Rajon Rondo, you never know. He seems like he's not the easiest guy to coach. You know, and then it seemed like at some point there was sort of like a revolt against Hoiberg. You know, I mean, shoot, Miami almost made the playoffs. I mean, Chicago almost didn't even make the playoffs. Now they're, you know, 2-0 with the home court over the one seed. It's pretty amazing. But I think going back to your Boston, and I know that you've got very strong feelings about what they've done. They've obviously decided that, you know, they're going to hold their cards until they feel like Cleveland and more specifically LeBron are on the downside. So I think that they've just decided, look, it's great getting a one seed. That's really cool. We want to really compete when we think we have a chance to get to the finals. And I still, you know, Ainge has clearly shown that he doesn't think that they could do it this year. And that was evident by not making one trade. I mean, you know, Toronto's doing stuff just like you said. And, you know, even the Wizards picked up people. I mean, they, you know, Cleveland was still shuffling around for a team that was in the mix to, you know, usually if you're a one seed or a two seed or even a three seed, you're thinking NBA finals. I don't think the Celtics have any aspirations that was going to happen.
But like, how is that possible? Like, at the point, you know, the trade deadline was middle of February, right? And obviously, so that's more or less 2 months ago, and so maybe 6 weeks from the time that the season was ending. You knew Boston was going to be no worse than the three seed. And, you know, if you really spun the schedule ahead, you know, they probably were going to finish ahead of the Wizards at the two seed just because they had an easier schedule than the Wizards did. The fact that they got to the one seed, maybe it's lucky on some level, but, you know, it still did happen. So you could see that they were going to be in the mix. Also, it's hard to ever say that LeBron James team isn't going to be the overwhelming favorite until proven otherwise. But, you know, there have been some cracks there, more so since the All-Star break, I would say. But there were some cracks earlier. But the bottom line is you're in position. I don't get it. Here's the thing I don't get. Let's just say all they had in their arsenal was that Brooklyn pick we've all talked about a million times, that Brooklyn first round pick for next year that maybe ends up as the number one pick in the draft, and maybe they don't want to trade that pick because, you know what, they're looking big picture, they're thinking to themselves, hey, this guy we're going to get is going to be a franchise changing player. You know, LeBron James isn't going to last forever. This could be a thing we can turn around and be a thing forever and ever and ever. That's great. That's not the case. Boston has an insane amount of picks. Over the next four, going from 2017 to 2020, they hypothetically will have the Nets first-round pick next year, the Nets first-round pick in 2018, which is also going to be most likely top five. They have their own first-round pick in 2018, a first-round pick in 2019, Memphis and the Clippers, first-round pick in 2019, their own in 2020, plus a buttload of second-round picks. I think I just said buttload on the podcast. Oh, well, anyway. They had an insane amount of picks. You couldn't tell me you couldn't do anything? What?
And it's even crazier when you think about, you know, they had a top pick this past draft, and it seems to me that the picks are much more valuable before you actually make the selection. You know, they picked up Jaylen Brown. He seems like he could be a good player, whatever, whatever. But, you know, who could you trade if you're offering Jaylen Brown right now? I mean, who would you really get? But if you were offering I think he was the third pick last year, you could have probably got some pretty interesting stuff. So these draft picks are really interesting, and they're just keeping all of them.
Well, and not only that, like, and I'm not a Boston Celtics guru here, so maybe I'm forgetting something. Last year, they had not one, not two, not three. They had three first-round picks and five second-round picks. I don't know if they traded any of them. They took a couple of, you know, international stashes in the first round beyond Jaylen Brown. In the second round, they took guys like you and I know, Ben Bentel from Providence. Whatever, he didn't make the team. Wizards fans freak out when Ernie Grunfeld blows a second-round pick. The Celtics had five last year. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't necessarily know what they've done with all these. It's not even a matter of why even have all these picks? At some point, you have to trade them. There's only so many players on the roster. You can't afford all these picks.
Isn't the only explanation that they're just waiting until they think they have a chance to do something? I mean, they clearly must be afraid of LeBron.
What else
could it be?
I don't know, other than potentially simply overvaluing these picks. Now, so I'm looking at their roster. So Demetrius Jackson from Notre Dame, a second round pick, he is still on the roster. Is that it? Along with Jaylen Brown, I think those are the only two guys who are currently on the roster. I think there's some merit to say, we don't want to go all in on a Jimmy Butler or Paul George who may, after a year or two, leave because of free agency or whatever. And we don't know if those guys were truly on the table. There were plenty of reports that said they were and all that, but we don't know exactly, and we don't know what, even if they were available, what the compensation was. Maybe it was like they wanted all those picks I just said for Jimmy Butler or Paul George, and maybe at that point it becomes insane. But when you have an opportunity to compete at this
level. Maybe, but you also could have won an NBA title.
Yeah, right. When you have an opportunity to compete at a fair level, I think you have to make the move. I mean, there have been plenty of times over the years where Wizards fans want to say to me, the Wizards didn't do anything. I'm like, you know, to what end? Like, what are they going to give up to move up a little bit? Some of the proposals that people were suggesting to me at the All-Star break for Wizards, I'm like, really? You want them to trade, like, all these things, including guys who are even on the team, for somebody who might be a minor upgrade at best? You don't blow up everything just to make a move. And we'll see. The trade that they gave up for Bojan Bogdanovic, not the Andrew Nicholson part, that was to dump the contract. The first-round pick they gave up was in part to get rid of the Nicholson contract. If Bogdanovic, who's a restricted free agent, leaves in free agency and signs elsewhere and they don't get anything out of it, the only way you could sort of say, well, it worked out, was if they make a run to maybe at least the conference finals, and even then,
yeah,
we'll argue on a rainy day how that works out. But that's not the case for the Celtics. They have 12, like I said, they have like 12 picks. By the way, I didn't even mention, this is a team. In 2015, they had R.J. Hunter as a first-round pick. They already cut him. I don't even want to hear that he is or isn't good. I personally think he could be good, but whatever. He's not in the league, so maybe he's not. A first-round pick got cut. Again, I see people all the time freak out about the Wizards blowing stuff.
That's why it's not a big that's why I never, you know, sort of like last year when the Wizards did the Markieff Morris for a first-rounder. It's like, who would you rather have, Markieff Morris or an unknown first-rounder that might be like R.J. Hunter and cut in a second?
Right. And to the point of to connect it with the Redskins. I know there's some people who sort of pay attention. Like I keep saying, if the Redskins don't get Kirk Cousins signed to a long-term contract by the time the draft is coming around, they better trade.
You got to draft a quarterback.
Well, there's that, but you also better trade him. I personally think, because he's going to leave at the end of the year. And the thing is, if you let's just say hypothetically San Francisco is the team that everybody seems to think they've got the second pick, they've got some other picks. It's the pick that's interesting. Once they pick a player, trading Kirk Cousins for that individual becomes far less interesting. Right, wrong, or indifferent, it just does. It's the perception of the pick, the hope of what that pick represents, that's the intrigue. Because also the Redskins get to choose who they would want to get. So yeah, as you've said earlier, it's the intrigue of the pick that people get caught up on, and I think maybe including Danny Ainge more than the other ones. Look, I mean, the Bulls are maybe playing way better than anybody imagined, and that's fair. But the Celtics are a try-hard team. Before before the Wizards game two in the media in the Wizards media room, some of us were getting into this, and you can probably hear me getting excited about this. I was way more excited and intense about this than. Not that anybody in the media room said this, but somebody brought up that some Celtics writer or somebody had a thing saying that Brad Stevens is on the hot seat. And I was like incensed. Are you insane? If Brad Stevens gets fired, all of Division I college basketball and half the NBA will be ecstatic. Brad Stevens is taking a roster that, look, there's talented players, but there's not great players on this team. Isaiah Thomas is having an amazing year. He's a 5'9" point guard who doesn't play defense. That's not the lead player on a finals team, right?
Well, yeah, I think I saw something about this on Twitter, and I think what happened was I think ESPN put out the stat that Brad Stevens has the worst percentage ever for a coach that's coached like 10 playoff games. He's 2-10, but there's obviously some perspective behind that record. But yeah, if they there's no way that that guy's on the hot seat. There's no way.
No, I mean,
And if he is, then maybe he can be an assistant at Georgetown.
I mean, all I'm saying is like, if you're gonna put blame on somebody, the blame should go to the guy who has 1,000 draft picks and didn't make a move to help his team. Look, and I'm not saying like the hypothetical Bojan Bogdanovic or they had gotten Serge Ibaka or somebody else who was there weren't like many big name players who got dealt at the All-Star at the trading deadline this year. Other than I guess Boogie Cousins, and that's a whole other level of things. Hell, look what Sacramento gave got in return for Boogie Cousins. I guess you can make that argument, but he's a special player that causes other potential complications. But they
Right.
didn't even make the subtle move. The guy that will give you the 15 minutes a game of what you need. That to me is it
The
crazy.
Brandon Jennings move.
Yeah, I mean. Like I said, their version of the Bogdanovich move or the Lou Williams move or the Serge Ibaka move, Taj Gibson, to have all those picks and do nothing with them. I mean, you can say whatever you want about the Wizards maybe undervaluing what the draft means lately because they keep trading picks away. At least they're making the move in the moment. You can't criticize the Wizards for not trying for the now. We'll see what happens in a few years. That's obviously the game for all of this. Maybe Danny Ainge nails the draft perfectly the next 2 years, and they are the team to beat for a decade. We'll see. Right now, they got a shot at the title, or at least making the finals, and didn't make a move, and now they're down 0-2 to the Bulls. So, bully.
They said pass.
Yeah. So, bully for them. Let's switch topics here for a quick second. Russell Westbrook, triple double last night in OKC's latest game that lost to the Houston Rockets. Interesting conversation that I was having about this one. When I first somebody told me about this, it was in the waning seconds of OKC's game. I was waiting. I was dealing with the Wizards post game as you were in different as you were as well. But I was like standing in the hallway, waiting for John Wall to come into the press room. And Michael Lee from the Vertical says to me, "Hey, do you see Russ? He's got triple double and he's got like 50 points." I'm like, wow, that's great. And he goes, oh yeah, he's taken 40 something shots. I'm like, what? Like that second line is very key, and it's interesting depending on how people react to it. If you only look at the triple double, 51 points, 10 rebounds, 13 assists. Wow, Russell Westbrook, he's amazing. When you look at 43 shots, he like didn't. I don't know the exact stat, but he basically just didn't pass the ball in the fourth quarter. and it's weird to see people. Some people say he's a, you know, that's amazing. He's a one man team. He has no help. He has to do all this. But I know a lot of other people, myself included, think, hold up. We all have played pickup basketball at some point. If you don't pass the ball to your teammates aren't going to be nearly as good. They're not engaged. They're not in rhythm to shoot. They're probably not going to play as hard on defense. And by the way, Russell Westbrook shot less than 40% from the field. It wasn't like he was making them all. So where are you on the Russell Westbrook thing? Did you see that as a, oh my Lord, how great is that triple-double? Or, dude, you shot the ball 43 times?
He's given me triple-double fatigue this year. And I really wanted to like him. I didn't like the way, you know, everyone has their own opinion. I didn't like the way Durant sort of left. I sort of viewed it as, you know, don't you want to be competitive? And, you know, you were just, you took the, you know, you were up 3-1, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. And I wanted to just be all in on Westbrook, and I have the NBA League pass, and I watch him anytime I can. It just doesn't seem, it seems like he wanted to go out there and do what he's doing without a regard to winning. And he says all the right things. He said the right things at the press conference last night. He said it only matters if we win, blah, blah, blah. But I just don't, I can't imagine anyone on that team likes playing with him. Just like you said, I mean, it's pretty rare that I'll play pickup at the gym if I'm not with at least one friend, because then that's at least one person you know that, like, will give you the ball sometimes. But this is his team. This is his job. And, you know, I caught the end of the game in the Wizards locker room. Wilbon actually was sort of just like, he was willing to talk to whoever was sort of standing there. He always seems very nice. And he was just like, he was sort of just like, wow, you know, he didn't really give an opinion, but, you know, you could tell everyone sort of has the same opinion, it seems. And it's just like, what's going on? This doesn't seem like it's good for basketball or good for Oklahoma City, you know? So it just,
no,
I think it's,
I'm just, yeah. Like when I was driving home last night, I heard somebody on ESPN radio mentioned the one-man team aspect of it and how great Russ was. And you know, from my basketball sensibilities, and for anybody who, you know, gives two craps about what I have to say on this podcast and you think I know anything, I'll let Bobby laugh about that. I can just promise you to say Russell Westbrook is not good for basketball. If I could ask Scott Brooks one question under sodium pentothal, I think that question would be, how much happier are you with John Wall as your point guard than Russell Westbrook? Or are you not? I can't comprehend that he is not ecstatic having a guy like Wall, who, even though these first two games of the playoffs has scored 30 or more points, he's getting guys the ball. He gets people in rhythm. I mean, Otto Porter finished fourth in the NBA.
The argument to that would be, like, he gets his 10 assists. You know, and that's what people do say, because obviously you get triple-double, you have to get 10 assists or more. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like everyone's engaged. Like for instance, the way John Wall gets everyone engaged. I mean, John Wall has made almost, you know, he basically made, you know, Otto a max player, and then Bogdanović came, and he was like, oh, he can shoot too if you get him open, and Jason Smith is a sniper now. So, yeah, comparing Wall and Westbrook is just, it's apples and oranges, even though they're both technically point guards.
Yeah, I mean, and to tie it into the Georgetown thing, you know, it used to sort of crack me up when people would say Allen Iverson, well, look at, like, he's not a Chuck, look at all the assists he get. Well, look, when you dominate the ball and you at some point throw it to another human being and something happens, that doesn't mean you're like the distributor, that you're a pass first point guard. But, you know, so there is a big difference with that. And there's even in this era of the NBA, you have like more guys like Isaiah Thomas and Damian Lillard who are maybe more points guard than point guard. But Russell Westbrook takes that to the extreme, and he's a hell of a player. He's all kinds of fun to watch. I said if I had a hypothetical MVP ballot, I think I would have put him second. But come on, man. You got to pass to some teammates. That's just not winning basketball. That's all I can say.
How long do you think he – two questions, two quick follow-ups. One, how long do you think he can continue doing this and be content? And two, for me at least, I don't know if it changes the way that you look at the Durant leave. Maybe, you know, Durant obviously knew all this. Durant played with him. You know, now I sort of look at the Durant leaving move and think, you know what? Maybe it wasn't about not being competitive. Maybe he just got tired of playing with Westbrook.
Well, I mean, I think that was an underlying current of him leaving. I mean, I think, especially that he didn't talk to him about it, I think there was something to that. I mean, and, you know, I said when, you know, Scott Brooks used to get a lot of heat being when he was at OKC, oh, he doesn't run a good offense. He lets these guys do too much. And then Billy Donovan came in and nothing changed. And I'm like, Well, Billy Donovan's not a dummy. He won two NBA. He won two college basketball titles. He has his own opinions. Somehow the same things are happening. And then Scott Brooks comes to the Wizards, and the Wizards don't do any of that. I mean, I know that, again, Wall and Beal have sort of been the dominant players in this playoff so far, but that's, you know, the flow of the season has been all, you know, team ball. They're all getting involved, passing. Or not. So Scott Brooks is clearly not wedded to whatever he was doing at OKC. So at some point you have to look at the guy who has the ball a lot. He's doing what he wants to do, and he's a great player. He puts up a lot of stats. He's fun to watch. But like I said, if you were saying to me, pick a team to you know, start a team to win, who's on it? And Russell Westbrook, the way he is playing, is not going to be on my team.
I will say this, and we've sort of been bagging on Westbrook here for about 5 minutes. I think I'd rather watch his triple-doubles than Harden's. I don't necessarily like the way that Harden just sort of gets fouled all the time. I don't know. I'm going to talk a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, if we're just talking entertainment value, there is not much right. better than Russell Westbrook.
Right. It's going to get you a six seed over and over and over again.
Yeah, no, he's all kinds of fun. And then the whole Durant thing only made it even more so. He played it like a WWE character. Like he wasn't letting down his guard. He just went at it. It was a lot of fun. All right, third and final topic here on the Locked On Wizards podcast with Bobby Bancroft. You can follow him on Twitter at Bobby Bancroft. You can follow us at Locked On Wizards and at Ben Standick. By the way, Bobby, I don't know if you're aware of this. The Locked On Wizards podcast now available on Stitcher. How about that?
You know, I did not know that, and I'm glad that I do.
Yeah, well, now you do. Tell all your friends, download that, and you'll be, you know, happier times for all involved.
They'll all be locked on.
Yes. Every time Scott Brooks says something about being locked in, he says it like every day. I'm like, oh, I wish I'd just say locked on. Anyway, last topic, we'll sort of swing this back to the Wizards. I had somebody say to me yesterday, boy, and obviously this is insanely early in the playoffs, but basically, boy, the Wizards look like the best team in the East right now. I mean, taking into a certain amount of reality of like where the point they started from and where they are. Now, they're up 2-0 in Atlanta. They've looked good. Meanwhile, the Celtics are down 0-2. We just discussed it. Cleveland, they won their first two games, but, you know, sort of their defense has still not been that good. I'm watching as we're talking right now, that game is going.
They're down 13 right now.
Right, right. And Indiana's better at home and all that, and Paul George is good, but blah, blah, blah.
Can you believe how much Born Ready plays? He wasn't on their team.
It's an indictment of what they're all about. But yes, I'm with you. It's crazy how much that's happening. At least Brandon Jennings was in the league all year prior to the Wizards signing him off the street when the Knicks cut him. Lance Stephenson was hanging out doing nothing all year, and now he's
which never really made sense. I mean, I remember Cleveland had him, and I'm like, oh wow, Cleveland gets him. Like, he's a guy that can do stuff.
But you know what though? I mean, like, Lance Stephenson is in the Russell Westbrook category of, I don't quite know if he understands what it takes to win, and it makes him a very difficult player to work into what you're trying to do. He's not boy, I don't mean to keep tying this all back to Georgetown stuff, but like, I think one reason Allen Iverson's career ended earlier than it did was because once he
went
from being the best player or an all-star to a guy that needed to be a role player, he didn't have
the Vince
Carter-like transformation because he didn't get sort of, how does he blend in? He only knows how to play one way, kind of, that be aggressive, I'm taking the ball, I'm getting some buckets. And Lance is kind of like,
it's hard to do that. I mean, well, first of all, we can continue on this. It's hard, guys like Iverson don't come around, so you don't really have someone to compare him to. The thing that I'd always compare it to is, how there was a time where all these old guards sort of ended up on San Antonio, you know, like Terry Porter is on San Antonio, Steve Kerr is on San Antonio. Like, Iverson was never able to do something like that for whatever reason. But yeah, Lance Stephenson is sort of like that, but you just can't, that guy can't be your best player. He can be at the height of his career like Iverson was, but at least for Lance Stephenson, like, he's just sort of a guy on their team. Westbrook is the best player. So when that guy's your best player, you're in serious trouble.
Well, I mean, I would say because Westbrook is so good, you can almost justify trying it. When he's only a role player, it's more frustrating. Like, because he does, like, dude, what are you doing? we only need you to do these things, and you can't even, you're so all over the place. But in any event, yeah, so Lance is playing for Indiana. But anyway, so the question is, it is insanely early to ponder this, but, and you were at, like I said, you were at the Wizards game with me, game two against the Hawks. Wizards, are they the best team in the East right now?
I think it's more of the Hawks are one of the worst teams in the East, and that's who the Wizards are playing. And I say this as someone that, you know, I'm high on the Wizards. I think they can go to the conference finals. You know, why not? But I feel like yesterday, you know, we're in the D.C. area. I think most people listening to the podcast are, but I'm sure there's Locked On Wizards fans all over the world. I'm sure you got stats to back it up.
Oh,
but it felt like yesterday, I'm sure you do. It felt like yesterday in this area, everyone was so worried about the Caps, and it was like, look, it's not 3-1, it's just 2-1. And everyone already penciled in the Wizards into the East Conference Finals. And I generally look at things like that, and I say they're both probably wrong. When everyone's so high on something, it's usually misguided. And I think some of that with the Wizards is I don't think that they're guaranteed the best team in the league right now. I mean, I think if they were playing Indiana, they might have split. If they were playing Milwaukee, I think they would have definitely split. It just so happens they're playing the Hawks, who if you reseeded the playoffs or if you ranked all the teams, you know, out of 16, I mean, the Hawks are like, you know, 15, 16. If you rank them in the East, it's hard to rank them higher than 7th or 8th, right? So that's, I think, really what's going on, because the Wizards are getting nothing out of Otto Porter. The Wizards aren't even functioning at the highest level that they definitely can. So to think that they're the best team in the East right now, I think is definitely – everyone needs to slow their roll a little bit.
Well, and it was funny. Apparently Dennis Schroeder, I'm not sure if – I think it was – I don't know if it was after Game 1 or in between Game 1 and 2 – said that he wasn't worried because the Wizards played their best game of the year in game one and they only won by 7 points. I'm like, what? Bradley Beal couldn't make a three. They got zippy from Porter, like you said. They shot a pretty nothing percentage from anywhere, and they won. And Atlanta took a bazillion free throws, as they did again in game two. So, yeah, so I think I'm with you. I think Atlanta, it's a 4-5 matchup, so we kind of, you know, you picture what a 4-5 matchup means. Atlanta.
Coin flip.
Yeah, but look, I mean, as you know, Atlanta hasn't played a home game yet. The series isn't over. But I'm with you. I think it's. I don't know if the Wizards have been playing at such a high level. They're definitely not going to get away with Otto Porter and Bojan Bogdanović not making threes once they move further into the postseason. You can't expect John Wall and Bradley Beal to get 30 points a game. Scott Brooks made the point the other day, and I'm so glad he did. Because I got crap a couple weeks ago when I said the Wizards are not as good when John Wall is putting up 30 a game. He said that's not well, we're not at our best when that's happening. I put that quote actually up the audio.
I think there was a lot of people that misunderstood that quote. You're often misunderstood, unfortunately, on the Twitterverse, and I think that was definitely a point of contention.
Yeah, it's such a shame how that happens. But I mean, you don't want Wall in particular scoring 30 a game. You don't want him and Brad doing it all the time. They were the fifth. It was the fifth time in Wizards history that they had two teammates score 30 or more in a playoff game. That is great. That's what those guys are there for. But it also is a point to say this was a 5-point game in the last minute, and it took the Wizards to have two guys score over 30 to sort of fend off Atlanta. So the Wizards have to get.
I think it's okay if Beal is just. I think if Beal's numbers are up in the playoffs, which they sort of have been for his career,
yeah,
that's okay. I don't think that but you're definitely right. Like if you're counting on John Wall to get you near 30, I think you're going to be in struggle town.
Yeah, I mean,
over a long period of games.
Right. Yeah. So at the end of the day, the Wizards have done exactly what they had to do. They took care of business. They got it done in the fourth quarter. Both games had a similar flow, hot start. The middle wasn't as good. They picked it up as the game went along in the second half and got it done. March and Gortat's been very good in both games. Morris was good in the first game. Jason Smith and Brandon Jennings helped out a lot in this one. They're doing all fine. Yeah. But let's hold up with the whole day looking like the best team in the East so far. By the way, if they were playing Milwaukee instead of Toronto, maybe Toronto is the one who's looking really good up 2-0 against Atlanta, and the Wizards were going, oh, man, how the hell are they dealing with Giannis? That guy is a beast. So, yeah. So, anyway, so the Wizards are good. Maybe they'll sweep Atlanta. We'll see. But, you know, beyond that, let's just, you know, hold off on such proclamations. I think that's fair. So, glad it seems like you agree as well.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a bummer. I feel like we've agreed on almost everything. Can we disagree? I mean, is there anything we can talk about that we're not going to agree on? It seems like Isn't that the whole point of all these things at the end of the day? Just two people screaming at each other?
How about this? I couldn't care less if the Wizards media room ever gets Mountain Dew again.
You know, it was working last night. The Sierra Mist was out. I mean, the Mountain Dew is a big part. See, I don't drink coffee, and I've always viewed Mountain Dew. Maybe it's just, like, psychological. Maybe it's not even true. But I feel like it's sort of like – it's like the hard soda without, you know, there being any sort of adult flavor to it. It just sort of seems like that's going to really get you going. And I need it. I don't drink coffee. I need the Mountain Dew. And we'll, if they could really up their game and get Code Red.
You know, like I said, I couldn't, even in my peak soda drinking, which has not been for a while, I never cared so much about Mountain Dew. I understood the hype.
Were you more of like a Mellow Yellow type guy? I think that's like the Coke. I think that's like Coke's version of Mountain Dew. I think I could be wrong.
I mean, I did that. I mean, Sprite, if I'm going to go down that sort of like, not, you know, the dark cold.
No, Sprite's like Sierra Mist. That's like Slice or Sierra Mist. I think by saying Slice, I'm definitely dating myself. Sierra Mist now. No, Mountain Dew is like, that's like the next level of like real, you know, Mountain Dew is like something that someone drinks if they're going to stay up and like video game all night. You know, like if you're playing like NBA 2K17 or whatever those games are or whatever, like that's what's going to get you going. Sprite's not going to get you through the night.
No, I'm just saying, I'll just go coffee, you have Mountain Dew, if they never get it fixed. It was an issue all year in the Wizards media room, so I just wanted to find, I just knew for you it was a big deal, so there we go, we disagreed on something.
I think it was actually one of the downfalls of Georgetown's season. I don't think they won a game when the Mountain Dew wasn't working, but they didn't win a lot of games anyway, so it might sort of be really some creative connecting of the dots there.
I hear you. All right, man. Well, I appreciate your time. I don't know when I will see you out and about next, but we will, of course, talk. And I will, of course, talk to
you. I'll be at Game 5. If there's a Game 5, I will be there.
Wow. All right. Well, good tip. Now everybody will know where to find
me. I don't think there's going to be a Game 5. I don't think so.
All right. I'm going to guess there will be. But if there's not, I'll be curious what Paul Millsap has to say. By the way, Paul Millsap has been the MVP of the series. As far as the media is concerned, he's been dropping good quotes.
Well, I was in the locker room for the Hawks when they had everyone going to the podium. There weren't a lot of media in there, and it was really hard to get some stuff. I mean, the most interesting thing that happened was Dwight Howard, we were kind of waiting for him, and he had like those, I guess those new Apple like wireless earphones. Those wireless earbuds, whatever they're called. I'm not familiar. And he took them out, and he was like, why do you guys want to talk to me? And instead of just like, I should have just said, because you're Dwight Howard. I didn't. But, you know, it's like, okay. And he was just like, hey, Dwight, there's a lot of fouls called. What do you think needs to change? I don't know. Hey, Dwight, what would you guys have done differently in the fourth to win? I don't know. Like, every question was, I don't know. It was less than a minute. So I feel like they're not going to get anything from him. And either he's disappointed or just checked out or both. I don't see there being a Game 5. Although, I'm totally cool being there for Game 5.
All right. Well, I do know that we need to get out of here. So, Bobby, thank you, as always, for your time. Thanks for you guys for listening. Follow Bobby on Twitter, at Bobby Bancroft. And, of course, make sure you follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you do your podcasts, so you don't miss any of the podcasts. We got a lot more coming up here. Wizards are off until Saturday, Game 3 in Atlanta. Practice, though, Friday. I will be there for that and let you guys know what is the latest from there. And until next time, see ya.
Deal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, off balance shot. Dagger!
Somewhere deep inside your mind, there's a place where dreams live. And now those dreams have the chance to come to life because USAA Life Insurance is sponsoring the Live Your Dreams sweepstakes where you could win $50,000. That's $50,000 to let those dreams out of your head and into your hands. Enter for a chance to win and view official rules at www.usaa.com/lifesweeps or call 1-800-531-LIFE.
No purchase necessary. USAA Life Insurance Company, San Antonio, Texas, and in New York by USAA Life Insurance Company of New York, Highland Falls, New York.